This episode of Bitch Propaganda was recorded Thursday, April 7th, 2011, at Bitch Headquarters in Portland, Oregon. This podcast does contain some strong language, including the word bitch. Welcome back to another episode of Bitch Propaganda. I'm Sherston Johnson, the web content manager at Bitch, stepping in for Kelsey Wallace. And with me today are...
Julie Falk, executive director of Bitch Media.
Deb Janerson, new media intern.
And today we're going to be discussing The Killing, which is a new show on AMC, Bristol Palin and the Candies Foundation, and an article in Slate, which is about quote-unquote gerontophilia, which is apparently the love of old people. But before we get to that, we all watched the premiere of The Killing, which is a new crime drama on AMC. It has a female detective lead played by Mireille Enos, who's on Big Love. She plays the detective Sarah Linden. And yeah, I was wondering what, after watching it, what you guys' first reaction was to it.
Well, honestly, the first half of it had me fairly bored, but then as the mystery started to get a little more complicated, I became more interested. And first reactions, it's very intentionally noir-y, and I'm not sure how I feel about that yet. But I do really like that it has a female lead, even though being more focused on the mystery, it hasn't developed her or the other characters that much.
Mm-hmm. It does feel noir-y, and it does feel kind of different than your usual American crime dramas. But then you get the introduction of this guy who's running for political office, who's this kind of like, you know, good-looking single guy with the good-looking, you know, campaign manager who he's sleeping with. And to me, that I was really jolted when it went back and forth between the scenes with, the female detective who's very unconventional, and then there's this very kind of conventional trope that didn't seem to fit in, and you don't know how it fits, but there it is, you know.
And he's the guy from Once and Again, which is weird.
Ah.
But, yeah, I was sort of jolted too, just because for a long time I couldn't figure out what he had to do with anything.
It's kind of one of those things, yeah.
Yeah.
Where he sort of stands out to a point where it makes it obvious that something is going to happen with that,
yeah.
With the plot. But yeah, can you talk about more about why the female lead is unconventional to you?
Well, I've not watched Big Love, so to me she was an unknown actress, and she's, I feel like Americans are so skewed in their understanding of really what real cops look like, because so many people's impressions of especially female cops comes from movies and television, and she doesn't look like a cop from movies and television. She's not, she's not a former model, now an actress. She's shorter. She has long hair, and she looks young too.
Yeah.
Especially in the first scenes that you see of her running, her legs are kind of short and they're strong as she's running, but she could pass for, a high schooler, and we get the, the impression that she's a single mother because she's has a fiance, and then she goes around wearing this big coat that's kind of masculine
yeah.
looking, and she's not dressed, to allure, though she is very, we get the impression that she's pretty sexual because she's has all these conversations, and she kisses her fiance a lot, but she's not, she's not playing the sexy role.
Mm-hmm.
Nor is she really playing, in my opinion, like the guy's girl,
mm-hmm.
Even though she's treated to this kind of going away party that puts her in the role of just, one of the fellows, but I'm not sure whether she's supposed to be one of the fellows and that just doesn't work for me, or whether, that's the box that they're trying to put her in and it doesn't really work.
Yeah, it'll
her.
Be really interesting to see, because we only got the pilot episode, so how all of those things develop as it goes along.
Mm-hmm.
It's making me wonder, talking about how it's not like other American TV, what the original was like.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is a remake of a European show.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem very European in some ways, in my mind, until the politician comes in.
You know, oh, yeah.
Which doesn't seem European to me at all.
We were talking earlier about the depiction of teenagers on this show. And while I thought it was cool, yeah, to see this single mom who, I mean, I think it shows that she has to balance her family with work, with her personal life. But the teenagers in the film, I mean, in the show, were a little bit more one-dimensional. You were saying, Deb, what do you think?
Yeah, about, what did I say? That they're in the angry, druggy, amoral box. Yeah, all of the teenagers that we've met so far, be they 13 or I think the girl who died is almost 18, is that what they said?
Yeah, she was 17.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all seem to be into drugs and various debauchery, which is, I guess, in line with the noir genre, but it is a little annoying. But we'll see how it develops.
Yeah, I was sort of disappointed that it, like, the first main plot is sort of about, like, missing nubile young white girl, which I don't watch a lot of crime dramas, but that seems to be something that is done to death. My bad, sorry.
I thought her child, I think, was his name Jack? Showed some potential, though, because, like, you saw him kind of joking around with the older cop and, you know, kind of doing this little boxing move, and you kind of could see him as a really young kid, but you know that he just had to leave school because he was smoking, but at the same time, he, you know, he wants to go to this party with his friends, but he looks really vulnerable and young, too, and is clearly really pretty nervous about moving away, and didn't seem to be, you know, just kind of angry about it. I thought he seemed kind of interesting, and I was interested to see how their relationship develops.
Yeah, I'm excited to see where the show goes. It's actually created and directed and partly written by a woman, Vina Sood, who worked on Cold Case, which I haven't seen. Have you guys seen?
No.
But I think that's cool, and I don't know if that's why we get more of sort of like this emotional side to crime. Not emotional, but like, you know, you get to see like within the family and stuff of the cops instead of, you know, all the blood and CSI stuff that is often on shows. Anyway, I don't know.
I mean, they're good at leaving off on bizarre moments.
Yeah. The end, if no one's seen it yet, the end of the pilot will definitely make you want to see the next episode.
No, I disagree.
Really?
I was just about to say, like, you know, I turn on the last 10 minutes of Murder, She Wrote or something like that, and I cannot get up, you know, until I know what happened. And usually I can be brought in by almost any crime story and really just need to know. But I kind of don't need to know. At least, I'm not sure why that is.
Well, I mean, they're planning to stretch this mystery out for the whole season, right?
Yeah.
Well, then I'm glad I have patience, because...
Moving on, Slate recently published an article by Jesse Baring, which was called Too Old to Hold, which I thought was a really bizarre article for a million reasons, and I didn't even know which part to excerpt to catch you up to speed on it. But basically, it's about this thing called, quote-unquote, gerontophilia, which is a love or erotic attraction to old people. And it's, like I said, it's kind of hard to parse out what Baring's point was about it, but he makes a lot of weird assumptions, like anyone who is attracted to someone who's old has gerontophilia. He puts it on a continuum of pedophilia, but also on a continuum of MILFs and cougars, just to show you sort of where this, like, bunk science lies. Again, I don't know what stood out to you guys about the article.
Honestly, I mean, I know it was a really ageist article, but the worst part for me was how he kept conflating sex with rape. Like, he talks about people who try and find older people to sleep with and people who assault older people, like, in the same breath as examples of gerontophilia.
Yeah, that's a super problematic part of this article, is when he brings up an example of elderly abuse, like in nursing homes.
He seemed to want to just bring, you know, he decided just sort of bring up this idea, you know, oh, you know, just on a, of course it's terrible to assault, sexually assault an older person, but just on a philosophical level, like, is that worse than a young child who is more cognitively aware and will have a lifetime of,
yeah,
of,
yeah, he uses the that word, I mean, bloodless, like on a bloodless, like, moral level.
Well, pretty much, well, he says he's not excusing the sexual assault, and then he goes on to basically do that, because he's like, yeah, well, you know, a 98-year-old doesn't really know what's happening, which is funny, because in the example he had just been talking about, the person figured out the 98-year-old was being assaulted because she clearly did know what was happening.
Mm-hmm. She was, yeah, frightened of the care worker. I found the whole article unnecessary. I found that portion of the article unnecessary and an unnecessary article. I don't know why Slate published it. I can't figure it out. It didn't seem, it wasn't clear to me whether he was making the case that gerontophilia was just a state of being attracted to older people, or whether it was a fetish, or whether it should be a crime, or whether it was sick. I mean, I wasn't really sure what his judgment was on it, but it was so offensive that you kind of had to think that he was, you know, making some sort of judgment.
Mm-hmm. He did say that it was almost necrophilia, right? Or something
he
along those lines.
He said that, again, with these weird continuums that he's established, he said in sheer chronological terms, like, I don't know, it reminds me of geology, gerontophiles are perhaps better thought of as being closer to necrophiles than cougar hunters. So yeah, it's super...
And then there was also the part where it was something like, we can kind of understand pedophilia because predators can reproduce with their victims.
Yes, there was this weird biological thing where he's like, yeah, you know, people on a basic evolutionary level, people aren't attracted to, like, postmenopausal people, basically. Like, if I can't reproduce with you, then I shouldn't be attracted to you, which doesn't make sense on, I hate
Well,
sort of that.
Yeah, I mean, he's a gay man.
He's a, yes.
And he's
yes.
presumably attracted to
people he,
well,
can't
reproduce
with.
Yeah. So
this is one of those points where we should try and find something to disagree about, but there's very little that I found in here that, as you said, the writing is so bad that it's, I mean, it's hard to even follow what his argument is. But it's on Slate. It's called Too Old to Hold, The Mystery of Gerontophilia, which to me seems like there's a bunch of parts where he's like, it's weird, no one has done studies on this before. And it's like he can't hear himself saying it. It's, of course there hasn't.
Yeah, been. And then he says, but female gerontologists don't don't exist, which if there are no studies, I mean then he just decided
he says they don't exist because Anna Nicole Smith and anyone in a situation comparable is just out for money.
Yeah, they're called gold diggers, right. Not gerontophiles. Hmm.
It also was bizarre how it started.
Yes.
It's like, I find old people super cute, but I would never want to sleep with one, unlike some people.
Well, and he talks about his relationship with his grandmothers, and then he goes on to say, I didn't really know my grandfather, so it wouldn't have made sense for me to talk about them, but I'm gay, so it kind of didn't make sense for me to talk about my grandmothers either. I mean,
He says that, like, he can appreciate the cuteness of old people because he has an androgynous personality.
That makes him docile? Like, is he, like, when he sees them pushing their grocery carts, like, is he not docile normally, but, like, older ladies walking slowly makes him feel
other
docile?
Men steal their grocery carts, I guess, is the idea. I don't know. That was just the first thing that caught me, and then it just got progressively worse.
I think the whole... There's a whole discussion with, you know, older people being called cute and, like, you know, being reduced to children. And he's definitely, you know, veers towards that way too often.
Yeah, there's definitely no older people agency in this article at all.
Yes.
He's, ironically, the one fetishizing old people.
Which is why I was confused from the start. I didn't know what this was going to be about.
The mystery of gerontophilia is this article.
Exactly. Well, lastly is this revelation that the Candies Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization whose goal is to, quote, raise awareness about and motivate teens to prevent teen pregnancy. And it is owned by the guy who runs Candies, the shoe company.
It is run, yeah, it's run by the guy, not owned by the guy.
Run by, yes. They have featured several ad campaigns, PSAs with celebrities, including Bristol Palin, who, as I'm sure you are aware of, was a teen parent herself. And the 2009 tax forms of the Candies Foundation have become available, and it turns out that they actually paid Bristol $260,000 to be their spokesperson, and they only spent $35,000 actually doing work to curb teen pregnancy by giving it to organizations. So they gave seven times the amount of money to Bristol Palin that they actually spent on organization. So I personally didn't take any of their campaigns that seriously to begin with, because they were awful. There was one where Bristol did something with the situation.
Excuse me, miss. Have you ever had a situation with the official situation?
Excuse me, Sitch?
Oh, snap, B. Palin.
It's probably the worst acting I've seen in a really long time. Yeah, I don't know if this just sort of is good in the way that it makes this organization's work transparent, like transparently bad, or that Julie, well, as an executive director of a nonprofit, how does it make you feel?
Oh, well, I wish I also ran a foundation. but, you know, I mean, I think it's interesting. Neil Cole is the CEO of the parent company of Candies. So he runs this, you know, huge clothing company, and his job there is to make money. And then through the Candies Foundation, his job is to try to bring awareness to teen pregnancy issues. But his job that he's held accountable for through stockholders is to make money through selling clothes like the Candies line. So I think that there's a conflict of interest there that taxpayers should point out, because this is a tax-exempt organization, and I think that that people have a right to be upset about that in and of itself, despite the decisions about where to spend the money. Now, it seems to me that it's been a just fantastically successful campaign as far as bringing attention to Candies brands. I mean, I hadn't thought about Candies in quite a while, but now I think about Candies, you know, once a day. And so from that standpoint, it's been really successful, and they feel it's been really successful. I mean, they don't regret one penny that was spent, it doesn't seem. And I mean, and his point that choosing Bristol Palin as their spokesperson has brought a huge amount of attention to the work of their foundation is indisputable. I mean, who even had heard of the Candies Foundation? Who even knew that, you know, that all these other famous people had been their spokespeople previously? I didn't know, but now everybody knows about
Bristol
Palin.
I did, sadly.
All right. Yeah. How?
Well, I just remember seeing the commercials. Like, okay. First of all, Candies... No, the first thing I need to say is that Bristol Palin's official title for them is Abstinence Ambassador. Just right. Throwing that out there.
Yeah.
And second of all, Candies is such a bizarre brand to me because it's a big claim, but they are one of the most sexed up brands.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's what I remember from when my days reading teen magazines.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, well, I don't know if anyone remembers the commercial with Mark McGrath and...
Oh, yeah.
When they were in the shower together.
That I think that's... I wouldn't be prepared to make that claim, but I was suspecting that.
Yeah, and the Candies Foundation started when I was in high school, and I remember being confused even then. Like, I looked it up online to see if they were the same Candies, and they were.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, the sexualization hasn't even stopped with their clothes. Like, the Candies Foundation itself is very sexualized with all the shirts, like, I'm worth waiting for, and...
Yeah, they're
sexy. It doesn't mean you have to have sex.
their sort of tagline is, pause before you play. It's like, what does that mean? You know, and I think they're trying to get behind abstaining, which, as Deb, you pointed out, that in a recent study, that's not what is causing less teen pregnancy.
Right.
It's like knowledge about contraception that the Candies Foundation is not really putting their foot forward on.
Yeah, well, that doesn't make any sense, because it's not saying not to play. It's saying pause before you play. It's not saying that there's something after play that you shouldn't be doing, or it doesn't make any sense at all.
Mm-hmm. They did say on their website that they support both abstinence education and comprehensive education.
Pausing to which is, put in contraception.
Yeah, which is very strange, but it does sort of explain why with the situation in Bristol. Like, Bristol was like, I'm abstinent, I'm not taking any condoms. And the Sitch was like, I'm not abstinent, I'm taking lots of condoms. And that was the whole PSA, by the way. That was it.
I know you're all about that abstinence thing, you know, but I mean, come on, be Palin, are you serious? Like, you're not gonna hook up with, like, before you're married? For real?
For real.
For real, for real?
For real, for real, for real.
Yeah, I find that a confusing message, but not... But I can handle the concept of both abstinence and contraception, but not from that PSA. I find that PSA.
Yeah, and I think it's, Bristol Palin herself sort of sends out a confusing message about being a teen mom, definitely, where it's hard to look at someone like her who's doing pretty well for herself.
Incredibly well. Yeah. I mean, how many, two worker households have brought in that much last year.
Yeah.
Working 20 days.
Yeah. So she is an interesting choice for a spokesperson. I don't know. I can't speak for teenagers, but she's not someone who I could identify with at all, who would, like, sort of speak to my situation, I don't think.
I mean, except for the fact that she very clearly had sex.
Yeah.
And, the other folks, I'm not speaking of anyone specifically, but often when you have those campaign people, you're like, they're having sex. And like, but it's like hush hush, or like, you're not supposed to know about it. But like, at least it's like, she did it, you know?
Yeah, and because of that, Candy's is giving her a lot of money. Like, if she weren't a teen mom, I
totally agree that that she's making teen momdom look like a very lucrative enterprise, not to mention a glamorous one, and one in which you're just more and more loved by Hollywood
because
of it. But I do think it's interesting that there's not this, like, false, proposition of, like, virginity that we're, like, supposed to buy into, and we all know it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Like Britney Spears.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just kind of makes me wish there was sort of, like, a truth-telling campaign instead of the Candy's Foundation, where Bristol Palin could speak openly about that, being like, yeah, teenagers are having sex, and you get pregnant sometimes when you do that. But we have yet to see that, I guess.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and she wouldn't give up her child. I mean, to say nothing of the salary to give up her child. I mean, she said that publicly many times, like, I wouldn't trade this for the world. It's very confusing. It's very, 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 very confusing.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting that Neil Cole, who's the head of Candy's Foundation and of Iconics, the parent company of Candy's, is the younger brother of Kenneth Cole. Mm. Just something to know about.
Who also has a foundation.
Yes. As well as famous
line. Yes. Well, now it's time to do our favorites. I'll go first. I'm excited about an album coming out from Kill Rock Stars. That's between Tao and Mira. Tao from Tao and the Get Down, Stay Down, and Mira of Mira. But they're doing a CD and a tour together, and it's really good and fun listening. So I would check that out at killrockstars.com.
I've spent the last week mentally in Sweet Valley, reading a book and writing about it.
Which book?
Sweet Valley Confidential. Just released book in which the twins are in their 20s. And something I found that was very helpful and also very entertaining was Shannon's Sweet Valley High blog, which is at shannonsweetvalley.com. And she has every Sweet Valley High book summarized, and detailed summaries too, with commentary and memorable lines, many of which are extremely funny, and also has a number of the other series, like Sweet Valley Senior Year and some Sweet Valley Twins. So that is something I would recommend.
Wow. I thought you were the world's expert on Sweet Valley, but maybe there's
I am. That's just a bonus.
Okay. I, in the Bitch Media newsletter in January, I believe, I said that I was excited about watching the BBC series Downton Abbey, and I didn't know if I would ever get a chance to watch it, but I did because I became addicted to it very quickly, and I enjoyed it a lot, so I'd recommend it.
Great. Thanks again for tuning in. We post new audio every Friday. Just visit bitchmedia.org/audio or subscribe on iTunes.